Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, July 2nd, 2026. There's a photo on the front page of the News Gazette with the headline, America at 250. We were all proud to be Americans that day. And the caption of the photograph is, the Normandy American Center contains the graves of nearly 9,400 war dead, nearly 1,600 names of the walls on the walls of the missing. All week, including in today's 20-page special section, we're asking community members to share stories of when they felt proudest to be an American. Among the contributors, Marine Corps veteran Ray Elliott, an author and former high school teacher who lives in rural Urbana. While there have been many times in my life when I've been proud to be an American, one that sticks out is during the summer of 1993, when my wife and I and an English teaching colleague hosted a trip to Europe. Our group included 13 Urbana High School students and 11 adults. On the way from Mont Saint-Michel to Paris, I asked our courier if we could go by the Normandy American Cemetery above Omaha Beach, where my cousin Bruce Elliott had landed with the 741st Tank Battalion in the early morning of June 6, 1944, for the D-Day invasion. The courier agreed and said it was worth the drive. It was a personal stop for me, and I thought it would be a teaching moment and an educational experience for the students. At the time, many of them didn't see it that way. One student later wrote, when I first heard we were going to a war cemetery in France, I didn't know what to think. I wondered why we'd spend time in a cemetery. But we all got off the bus and walked through the entrance and out into the cemetery, where 9,389 Americans are buried. 307 of them are still unidentified. Nearly 1,600 names are listed on the wall of the missing. Proceeding down the walkway to the cemetery, a monument had words reading, this embattled shore, portal of freedom, is forever hallowed by the ideals, the valor, and the sacrifices of our fellow countrymen. Everyone became quiet as we walked through the precisely laid out rows upon rows of graves, marked by white marble crosses and stars of David. A small chapel was at the center of the cemetery. The group spread out, walked slowly among the markers, and stopped to read names of those who had died in the invasion nearly 50 years ago at that time. Many of them had barely stepped foot on French soil. Many of them didn't even reach shore. Some of the students walked down the hill to the beach and silently stared out across the water. I stood on the hill before I walked down to the beach, where my cousin and thousands of U.S. troops had landed. Nearly 2,400 had been killed or wounded that first day of the landing. When we got back on the bus, it was solemn. The lesson that we all learned, adults and students, and had reinforced, was to more deeply appreciate the cost so many had paid for the freedom we enjoy. I heard many comments about the visit to the cemetery later, all indicating that it was an impactful visit. The same student who wondered why we were stopping at a cemetery wrote, when I stood at a beach where others took a stand and died, I knew my connection to events of long time ago tied me forever to them. I see differently now in the present. I think we are all proud to be Americans that day. No play zone for now. There's a photograph with the accompanying caption. A Champaign police officer take pictures of the scorched and partly melted Kenwood Elementary School playground after a mulch fire there Wednesday afternoon. Randy Smith, the Champaign Fire Department's public information officer, said there was some fairly significant damage to play structures. The fire department responding to reports about the blaze at around 4:05 p.m. The fire was put out quickly and no injuries were reported, he said. The cause of the fire is still under investigation. And the photo shows melted and distorted playground equipment. Caddy Academy, new program promises skills that will carry youth forward. Those who complete it eligible to apply for a full ride scholarship. A new area program aims to train young women in leadership, financial literacy, and more by way of an unexpected path, working as golf caddies. The idea behind the Caddy Academy came from seeing how powerful caddying can be as a pathway to opportunity, said Clara Kara Chin, Senior Director of Caddy Academy and Scholarships at the Western Golf Association Evans Scholars Foundation. Caddying teaches responsibility, communication, work ethic, and confidence. But historically, not every young person has had access to that opportunity. The Caddy Academy has been around since 2012, but this marks the first summer for the new Illinois Youth Women's Chapter. Based out of the University of Illinois Evans Scholarship House, the program started June 21st and will run through August 8th. Participants are selected during their freshman year of high school and spend the following three summers in the program. The seven-week academy includes classroom work, workshops, and field trips alongside actual caddy work at Atkins Golf Course in this case. Participant Annalise DeLaTorre urges anyone who comes out to golf to have one of the caddies help them out. We would love to talk with you and get to know you and just be there to caddy so you can play your best golf game, she said. DeLaTorre heard about the program through her school and was excited about a chance to learn something new. Caddying also pays well, and she hopes to save up for college. She also applied for the Evans Scholarship, a full tuition scholarship the Western Golf Association provides specifically to caddies with limited financial means. Full completion of the Caddy Academy earns a participant eligibility to apply for that scholarship. Joanna Hernandez, Senior Manager of the Caddy Academy and Scholarships, said that caddying teaches some skills the way many other jobs do. Students need to be punctual, learn to communicate, pay attention to details, tackle challenges, and carry themselves professionally. They also learn how to advocate for themselves, support one another, and keep going even when something feels unfamiliar or difficult, Hernandez said. The confidence, independence, and responsibility students build through caddying can help them in school, in college, and in whatever career path they choose. While other jobs, especially the type of customer service roles available to teenagers, may provide a lot of the same experience, Caddy Academy participants say it just isn't the same. Vivian Martinez, lead intern for the Academy here in Champaign-Urbana this summer, said the time caddies spend with each customer makes all the difference. At McDonald's, you don't shake a person's hand and talk about yourself and where you come from. That's a really special part of this job, that you're not only representing yourself, but literally the people who you grew up with, Martinez said. You just want to make sure you make a good impression throughout the 4 hours that you're with them. Another helper at the Academy, who previously completed it herself, is counselor Carolyn Hart, who said the Evans Scholarship and the money from caddying, which teens can start earlier than many other jobs, allowed her to attend college. She agreed with DeLaTorre, everyone should head out to Atkins and support the girls while they're working there, she said. These girls work so hard and give up their summers to live away from home. They're only 14 or 15 years old, so this is a really new experience and a really big opportunity for them, Hart said. They're so ready to work. They're so excited. Teacher of the Week, Stacy Airy, English as a Second Language, Centennial High School, Champaign. Her purpose? Service. Stacy Airy's first teaching job came at her alma mater, Champaign Centennial High School, and 33 years later, she's still there. The Bonneville native works as an English as a second language teacher and serves as chair of the school's multilingual learners department. I find my work important because English proficiency is the key to my students successfully navigating their new school, community, and country. Our students need to quickly learn English not only for themselves, but to help their families too. I became a teacher because I heard something that stuck with me, which was basically, paraphrasing, when you are not sure of the path you want, serving others is a mighty purpose. The best way for me to serve others was becoming a teacher. I really love teaching ESL. The students in my classes last school year spoke collectively 12 different languages. The joy of learning about new cultures that you see play out right now in the United States because of the World Cup happens all the time in my classroom. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is, when I have time at the end of the year, my favorite lesson is my ESL 2 class is my You Are the Expert lesson. Students have to put together a presentation to teach the class how to do something because I believe everyone is great at doing something. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when we are having independent reading time and my students beg for more time to read. I love looking around the room and seeing my entire class completely engrossed in their books. Also, I make a big deal out of the first time I have a complete conversation with a student in English, especially when they started Centennial with zero English. It warms my heart when this happens. I love seeing how proud they are of themselves for doing it. That's really what teaching is all about, watching your students grow and accomplish big and little things. I truly have the best job in the world. I keep students engaged by breaking the class hour into multiple activities. Honestly, I'd be bored out of my mind if I just lectured all hour. As an ESL teacher, my goal is to design lessons that are relevant, rigorous, and accessible to my students. Building a supportive classroom community is also vital to me, so I like to do activities that lean into that. Many of my students consider me their school mom, which I don't take lightly. I had to earn their trust and respect for that title. I get to know my students and their families and let them learn about me and my family, too. Something else I'm passionate about is my daughter Marin, who swims for the University of Illinois, so I am a proud mother of a D1 female athlete. I am very passionate about encouraging young women to continue or start to play sports in high school and beyond. I am also very passionate about all children learning how to swim. It breaks my heart how many of my students don't know how to swim and are scared of water. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school were, I have two favorites. I co-teach Algebra 2 at Centennial with the amazing Betsy Alderman. She taught me to get over my fear of math and love it. My other favorite teacher is my son, Cade. He is extremely patient while teaching me how to use electronics or how to explain physics and chemistry to my students. If I weren't a teacher, I would definitely want to do something in agriculture or horticulture. My first job was at Prairie Gardens, which really helped nurture my love of gardening. I still see my old manager, Steve Brown, there. He must have started working there when he was 12 years old. I retire in 2 years, so I'm excited to see what I will do in the next chapter of my life. I'm spending my summer gardening and enjoying the lake, going to a couple of concerts, listening to country music, and watching the sunset from my deck, walking and reading my Kindle, yes, at the same time, and spending time with my friends and family. Teaching can be extremely exhausting, especially for introverts like me, and this is my best time to reset. We have Mike Hale's column, Records and Radio, The Art of Picking Music for the Radio, Part 2. The continuation of my last column, how do you decide what songs to play and or why do you play certain songs? But first, two quiz questions. Name the 5 top 10 hits on the Billboard Hot 100 that have USA in the title. Who are the 5 artists with American in their group name who achieved top 10 hits on the Hot 100? Picking up the story in 1985, K104 was still operating with an audience interactive format with guardrails to keep us on the main road. We were still working with what gave us great success in K104's early years and attempting to navigate the rapidly changing music landscape. WLRW became a well-executed, laser-focused contemporary hit radio outlet, which at the time was America's hottest format. On the other side, you had WPGU playing more active rock, while WZNF was classic rock. To make a long story short, WKIO transitioned to an up-tempo adult contemporary format, playing 30% current hits and 70% non-current songs from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. We created lots of music features as well as request segments that kept interaction strong. The process of creating a successful format lane also necessitated stricter controls on how we rotated our music. The acquisition of WKIO by Shared Tack gave us the ability to tap into one of his companies with the goal of creating music rotation software, as well as a separate project to computerize our commercial scheduling and billing. Unfortunately, we came to the energy versus results conclusion that it was not worth our effort to do it in-house. I went with Plan B, which was RCS Selector, the hottest software on the market in 1986, and everybody was running on an IBM 286. All of a sudden, I was creating music logs to facilitate our transition to adult contemporary. Selector became my trusted music programmer tool. By the way, the manual pictured, issued in the 90s, was 868 pages. Making decisions on what current songs to play was fairly easy. Radio and Records was my go-to publication since it had weekly playlist information from hundreds of stations around the country. Deciding how to build and evolve the non-current music library was fun. Being a radio music geek growing up in the Midwest until 1970, working in Bloomington, then Champaign, I spent a total of only 5 years in Southern California. Thus, I had 30 years to develop a Midwest knowledge base and gut instinct regarding music. Whatever music I was programming down through the years, I would become a student of that particular radio format. I would focus on a half dozen successful stations from around the country. Friends and families would record cassette tapes on everything a station played over a 2 or 3 hour period in the daytime. You would never see me go on any trip without taking my portable cassette player and a bag of tapes. There was no streaming back in the late 80s. Then, like a ray of light from heaven, a company named MediaBase in 1988 began to monitor successful radio stations in the top 35 markets. Their publication, Monday Morning Replay, gave me and hundreds of programmers around the country real 24/7 data on every song a station played. It was awesome. Besides my gut and my tools, every few months, we would ask listeners to provide programming feedback by calling in on the air or sending a fax or letter. A few weeks ago, out of the blue, DWS morning personality C.W. Greer mentioned how neat it was we asked over the air what listeners liked and disliked about our station. In the late 80s, he was working at the competitor WLRW. Every encounter I had with a listener would find me asking questions about WKIL music, promotions, etc. If someone wanted a K104 listener, I'd ask what attracted them to their current favorite station. My favorite listener promotion of all time was the 14 years I did Mike in the Morning Business of the Day. I made 2,300 workplace visits delivering gifts from Gilman to Neoga, Crawfordsville, Indiana to Decatur, and everywhere in between. That gave me the opportunity to be in workplaces and ask questions and learn from listeners, as well as those who were forced to listen to WKIO in the workplace. Like I said, it was a wonderful promotion. That's why this year I am so thrilled that Pat Snack, Kathy Sheeran, and Jordan Hamilton have given me the opportunity to deliver parlor donuts to area workplaces. Just as WKIO was enjoying success in the adult contemporary format lane, some interesting music decisions would lie ahead as we closed out the 80s. The FCC was opening up the FM band in East Central Illinois with the creation of 96.1, 100.3, 102.5, and 105.9 in Champaign County. It looks like this music programming topic will extend to Part 3. Thank you for your feedback. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Notes from the newsroom. An extraordinary radio producer, Ed Bond, looks forward to his role as DJ every 4th of July on WDWS. With America's 250th falling on a Saturday, that means an early wake-up call for Bond, who will be behind the mic from 6 to 9 a.m. on 1400 AM 93.9 FM before giving way to Illini Pella Sports Talk. For two decades, Bond has emceed a July 4th program that includes patriotic tunes, Roger Huddleston's reading of the Declaration of Independence, Red Skelton's Pledge of Allegiance, and the story behind the Star-Spangled Banner as read by Brian Barnhart. Saturday's show kicks off with a recording of a 2017 concert from the Virginia Theater hosted by the late Jim Turpin and featuring the music of Linda Morehouse, Yvonne Redman, and the Champaign-Urbana Civic Wind Band. Bond will also take listener requests during the 3-hour show. Text 217-356-9397 or email ebond@cimg.media. I'll only have time to read part of the many stories in here for the 250th anniversary of American recognition, but I'll start with this one. The American flag has been recognized across the globe as a symbol of freedom for centuries. While the current stars and stripes is most familiar to billions of people worldwide, the flag has undergone many changes since the United States declared its independence from Great Britain. According to the National Flag Foundation, Old Glory has been revised 27 times in the 2.5 centuries since American colonists fought for and won independence from British rule. Of course, most times those changes occurred as a new state or states joined the Union, with each edition marked by the inclusion of another star in the blue field in the upper left quadrant. The initial 1777 flag included 13 stars denoting the original 13 colonies, which eventually became the first 13 states. Similarly, the modern flag now features 50 stars representing the current 50 states, and it has remained unchanged since July 4, 1960, when the 50th star was added in recognition of Hawaii's 1959 admittance as the 50th state in the Union. Star-Spangled Stories. Happy 250th, America. To mark the occasion, editor Jeff DeLacio asked dozens of community members to share a memory about the time they were proudest to call this country home. There's so much more to come in the days ahead, including in Friday's special weekend extra edition. To join in on the fun, email your patriotic prose to jdelacio@news-gazette.com. Happy 250th birthday, USA. Congratulations to the United States of America on 250 years of independence, resilience, innovation, and hope. From the ideals that shaped the nation's founding to the generations who have worked to expand freedom, opportunity, and unity, this milestone is a powerful moment to honor the past and look forward to the future. May this 250th birthday be a celebration of the American spirit, bold, diverse, determined, and always striving forward toward a more perfect union. Happy birthday, USA. With extreme gratitude, Habib, Habib, and family. We could not scoop our new limited edition flavor lunar cheesecake until the astronauts landed safely, Joan Dykstra, Savoy Village trustee. As a teenager working the Sunday afternoon shift at Baskin-Robbins in Rockford, staff and customers were excited yet anxious as we waited for news of Apollo 11. We were under strict orders. We could not scoop our new limited edition flavor lunar cheesecake until the astronauts landed safely. At 4:17 p.m., the Eagle touched down, and we proudly put out the tub. That night, my family watched as Neil Armstrong stepped down onto the lunar surface and uttered the famous word, "That's one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind." I was in awe of the courage shown by Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins, and deeply proud to belong to a country that could achieve such spectacular heights. The day my dad pinned Navy wings of gold on my chest, Joe Tanner, Danville High School alum and recently inducted U.S. Astronaut Hall of Famer. The day I felt most proud to be in America was March 7, 1975. That was the day my dad pinned new Navy wings of gold on my chest, making me a naval aviator. I was proud because I had just finished arduous training qualifying me to serve my country and protect it with my life if necessary. Of course, I was very proud to serve our country on the 4 space shuttle missions, but that emotion did not compare to the pride of earning my Navy wings. Please accept this flag as a symbol of our appreciation for your loved one's honorable and faithful service. Bill Engel, Paxton Mayor. I am a member of Paxton Prairie Post 150 of the American Legion, and one of my proudest moments is when an honor guard is asked to perform military rites at a veteran's funeral. To show honor and respect to the veteran who has shown the dedication to serve and to defend his or her country and our reason and our duty to defend, to provide this flag. It is folding the flag, calling commands for the detail on the 21-gun salute that fills us with pride each time we are asked to be a part of the funeral ceremony. I have been privileged to present the folded flag to the next of kin a few times, and the emotion can be overwhelming, only to be exceeded by the playing of taps. On behalf of the President of the United States, and a grateful nation, please accept the flag as a symbol of our appreciation for your loved one's honorable and faithful service. If you know and you have been a part of this, you would agree this is a very proud moment. When we all vote, we do not vote only for ourselves. We vote for our families, our neighbors, and those whose voices are not yet fully represented. Kenitha Fay, Managing Director, We Love Urbana. The happiest day of my life as an American was November 6, 2012, the day I took my third-grade daughter to the polling place to watch me vote for the very first time as a proud U.S. citizen exercising my right. The right to vote means different things to different people. For me, it represents belonging, humility, responsibility, and hope. It took me 13 years to become a citizen and earn the right to vote. Those 13 years taught me what it means to live in a country you deeply care about while having no voice in the shaping its future. Like many immigrants, I worked hard, paid taxes, raised a family, and contributed to my community. I did everything in my power to help build a better society. Yet for many years, I could not choose the people making decisions that affected my life, my safety, my daughter's education, my city, my state, and the country to which I have dedicated so much of my life. The experience deepened my commitment to voting and civic engagement. When we all vote, we do not vote only for ourselves. We vote for our families, our neighbors, and those whose voices are not yet fully represented. We vote for people who contribute every day but are unable to participate in the democratic process. Years later, I came to understand just how meaningful that first voting experience was for my then 8-year-old daughter. Watching me vote left a lasting impression on her. It helped shape her understanding of civic responsibility and ultimately influenced the career path she chose. That day was more than casting a ballot. It was about showing my daughter that democracy is not something we take for granted. It is something we protect, participate in, and pass on to the next generation. If you turn 18 by November 3rd, if you have moved or changed your name, please register to vote or update your registration at ova.elections.il.gov. History buffs. America's 250th birthday provides a good opportunity to recognize some pivotal moments in East Central Illinois history, events and trends that shape the community we call home and the people behind them. With that in mind, multimedia reporter Kathy Reiser asked several history-minded locals to tell us which aspects of local history they think the history books might overlook. A significant role model and a standard for Black excellence. Barbara Suggs Mason, retired school superintendent and educational consultant. Suggs Mason chose Albert R. Lee as an unsung hero of local history. Lee was born in Champaign County Farm in 1874 and was a descendant of one of the earliest known African-American families who settled in East Central Illinois during Reconstruction. His father had been enslaved. Like so many of these early settlers, Lee's family were ordinary men and women who brought them the values of self-determination, resilience, ingenuity, and understanding of the importance of education for racial and social uplift, and faith that the future promised a better world for themselves and their children, she said. This has been Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, July 2nd, 2026. Please stay tuned for Part 2.